Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Earthworms. From a young age, we've been taught that they are our friends. They help farmers by breaking down organic material and breaking up the soil, and they make great bait for fishermen. But that's only half the story. Vermont has at least 16 species of worms, and none of them are native. Most of them are, in fact, invasive, meaning they actually compete with native species for resources. And there are other reasons to be wary of the earthworm. Joseph Gores, a professional of ecological soil management at UVM, does research on earthworms, and he explains some of those reasons.
In Vermont, most of them have come here with European settlers about 300-400 years ago, and there's new arrivals now that come from Asia that might have been here for 20 years, maybe less than that. In Vermont, we do not know, but some of these worms have been seen in greenhouses maybe for 50, 60 years that come over from Asia in with rootstock and maybe soils.
And what's the problem with having non-native species of earthworms?
Our forests have developed in the absence of earthworms after the Ice Ages. The Ice Ages basically wiped all the earthworms out, all the native earthworms that were in this area.
So we did have earthworms before the Ice Age?
Most likely, yes. So they were wiped out. And then, you know, there was about 10,000 years worth of forest development without earthworms. So we had slower decomposition processes in the forests. And the forest developed a really thick layer of organic matter. As the earthworms invaded, that layer was consumed very quickly, with the consequence that suddenly a lot of the plants that really rely on that thick layer of organic matter, you know, because they need it for germination or they need it for seed storage, suddenly weren't there anymore. And so now you see forests that have a very scarce understory. And that might create problems in other ways, because just think about your average deer coming to the forest, looking around for the regular forage, regular food that they had, and they don't see it anymore because the earthworms have changed the forest soil in such a way that the forage can't grow anymore. So now they're going to go for your maple saplings, and that will reduce the amount of regeneration that forest can have. And while we don't see those effects of these pests in the short term, like you would see with pests that are in agriculture, where your cabbage is eaten up right away, or mm-hmm. your tomatoes have a weevil in it, and it's very, very clear that you have a pest there. With the earthworms, you know, it takes years, tens of years, 20, 30, 40 years before you see any real damage. And maybe in 100 years' time, you might see a change in the forest structure in terms of trees as well.
So what the worms are doing, if I have you right, is, you know, there's this layer of, you know, leaves on the ground in a forest, and then underneath that is this layer of sort of decomposing material, and then you get to the soil, and the worms are just going through that decomposing material and turning it right to soil, so we just have leaves and then soil?
Well, there's different kinds of worms. There's earthworms that live right in that organic layer, and they're called epigeic earthworms. They will actually remove that layer, and potentially some of them might mix that organic matter with the mineral layer below.
Which is why we love the earthworms in compost and gardens.
Absolutely. So in compost and gardens, it's wonderful to have those earthworms. The question is, you know, where is your garden? Where is your compost? Is it right next to a pristine forest where they might actually do damage? I have a compost heap. I have a vermicompost bin. I love my vermicomposting earthworms. On the other hand, I see the damage that's done to the forests in the Northeast and actually spanning all the way across the northern tier of the U.S. and into Canada. There's a lot of forest damage done because of these earthworms.
What kind of forest damage? I mean, you mentioned that several of these worm species that we have here now came over 300 years ago or so with settlers who came from Europe, and mm-hmm. they were in the ballast of ships or came over in one way or another. That's been a long time then to have been in our forests, and if you go walking through the forest now, they look pretty healthy. So what's the damage that these worms are doing?
Well, if you go to a forest, let's say in Shelburne, Shelburne Farm might be a good example, and you compare that to a forest around Camel's Hump. So you try to, you know, stray from the trodden path on Camel's Hump, and you have hubblebush and all sorts of things that might actually trip you up. So it's really tough to get through some of that understory. Whereas some other forests, there's no understory left.
So you just have the trees.
You just have the trees and maybe a few saplings. And so that's really heavy damage to the forest. And think about it in terms of biodiversity. So the biodiversity in that forest is way down. We do not know what's going to happen to the trees in the long run. I mean, and not to the trees that are there now, but, you know, to that forest. What is the composition of tree species in that forest?
And you can attribute a lot of that to earthworm activity?
It's actually a combination of earthworms and deer. So if the earthworms destroy the habitat for the smaller ephemeral plants and maybe some of the smaller browse that deer feed on, then the deer will find other things to eat.
And you're concerned that they might actually be able to have an effect on our maple tree population, because if the deer are eating those young maple saplings, mm-hmm. they're not going to grow.
Yeah, this summer I traveled around Vermont quite a bit under a grant that we obtained from the Northern State Research Cooperative. And I saw places where there was no regeneration in the maple forest at all. It was very bare. And then there, I saw some other places where there was earthworms and there was a ton of regeneration. So, you know, we have to kind of figure out why is it that in some areas you have really tremendous damage and some areas, you know, it looks like a regular forest understory.
Do you have a theory on that yet?
I think it probably has to do with soil properties, and it might have to do with legacy, land use legacy. So most of the forests here in Vermont are not virgin forests. They have been farmed for a while. And so while during that farming episode, maybe there was, you know, the earthworms might have been brought in, not on purpose, but, you know, with plant materials. You end up with populations in that particular space, and they might have hung on there. It's a really interesting question as to why you have earthworms in one place or another. You know, it may have to do with the amount of calcium in the soil. Earthworms breathe in oxygen and they breathe out calcite. So it's like passing kidney stones. It's really interesting.
There's also some concern about carbon and earthworms. It's a little bit confusing to me because there are some different opinions and different ways that the earthworms could be contributing to our carbon problem or being helpful. So can you explain it?
So recently there have been a few papers in Nature that attribute some of the greenhouse gas emissions to earthworms. And it's, you know, it's probably a small amount, but they seem to be contributing quite a bit to that. So it's not only carbon dioxide, but also methane and nitrous oxide that might be generated by these earthworms. And so the concern is if you have these invasions into previously unoccupied places, unoccupied by earthworms, they will, for a short while they're feeding on the plant litter and the organic layer in the soil, they will for a short while, maybe 10 years, over a period of 10 years, really increase the carbon emissions from that soil.
Okay, and so that's the bad side.
That's the bad side. So on the other hand, earthworms also form these very small fecal pellets that we call aggregates. So they're soil aggregates that might actually protect some of that carbon. If organic matter is stored in those aggregates, really deep down in those aggregates in very, very small pores, then microorganisms are probably unable to decompose that, in which case it is protected from this. So there's two sides to this equation. There's, you know, one thing saying, oh, yeah, they're decomposing things really fast. And then on the other side is, you know, they might be incorporating some of this carbon into both their fecal matter as well as into calcite that they produce as part of the respiration. And that calcite is, you know, has really low solubility and will stick around for a while.
So studying earthworms is actually fairly exciting then, even though it might sound on the face of it like a pretty boring work.
Yeah, it can be boring. I mean, you have to sit in the forest and dig a hole and start counting earthworms. You have to sift through the soil and, you know, and but on the other hand, it's really exciting when you look at the data. It's really exciting. You know, it's just amazing what you find. So you're finding really interesting worms here. So we have 16 to 17 species here in Vermont. They're really beautiful earthworms, but they seem to be accelerating some of the damage. So we're not sure. So one of these earthworms, Aminthus agrestis, or the crazy snake worm. Crazy snake worm. So I repeat that. The crazy snake worm is actually on a list of prohibited species in Wisconsin in the natural resources law, and it's named right there next to the ash borer and, you know, all these things that we are afraid of in Vermont. And, you know, we haven't really gotten to the point to say, well, you know, there's this Aminthus agrestis out there, this crazy snake worm that is doing damage, and it's a forest pest. It is here.
Oh, we do have it.
Oh yeah.
What does it look like? Can somebody identify it if they see it?
Yeah, it's actually pretty easy to identify because it's very different from most of the European earthworms. That's the other species that are here in Vermont. When it's fully grown, it's about 6 to 8 inches long. It moves like a snake, and it has a band, a saddle all the way around the worm. That saddle is pretty close to the nose, and it's pretty well set off from the rest of the body because it's very light in color. If you look at the worm under in the sunlight, you often find iridescent stripes on it. It's really beautiful. And the crazy comes from that it jumps out your hand if you handle it the wrong way. And it might also shed its tail just like a salamander would. And so the tail is just wiggling like crazy and the worm is slithering away.
So what are we to do then? Should we put a bounty on all worms in Vermont and start trying to get rid of them? Or, you know, what's the solution?
That's a really good question. I mean, the solution basically lies probably in some kind of biological control that we don't really know those control agents yet because, you know, there's very little research done on this. And as much as we would like to do research on it, it's a costly matter. And you know, there's really not many agencies interested in promoting biological control for species that are thought of as beneficial, right? So we still have, they still have street credibility or forest cred, you know, whatever you want to call that. And so who will fund that? Question mark. Anybody out there?
All right. So that's your plea. Somebody fund this research.
Please.
Well, Professor Gores, fascinating research. Thank you very much for telling us about
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Joseph Gores is a professor of ecological soil management at UVM. He's conducting earthworm research along with UVM plant and soil science professor Don Ross.